Episode number 10 of The Starter is brought to you by BackMyBook.com. Are you a hardworking entrepreneurial fiction or nonfiction author? Want to take control of your own destiny? Then check out BackMyBook.com. BackMyBook provides authors with global e-commerce for print, audio, and ebooks, integrated ordering options for your physical inventory, email marketing, and content distribution for all print and electronic formats. What's more, BackMyBook offers an industry-leading 90-10 royalty split. And yes, you, the author, get the 90. Check them out at BackMyBook.com. And now, on with our story. Welcome to The Starter, book two in the Galactic Football League series, written and performed by New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. This novel is suitable for ages 12 and up and contains graphic on-field violence. This novel and book one, The Rookie, is available as an ebook for Nook, Kindle, and most ebook readers, as a limited edition hardcover, and as a full-length unabridged audiobook. To order any version, visit scottsigler.com/order. Hello, junkies! This episode, yes, sponsored by the guys at BackMyBook.com, who made the All-Pro pre-order go off without a hitch. After the episode, I'll talk a little bit more about my experience with BackMyBook.com. If you are an author, and that means professional, best-selling mid-list, or, this is important, if you are an aspiring author wondering how you're going to succeed in this modern electronic publishing world, you'll want to listen to that. But for now, we will be at Balticon number 45, A Real Girl, Ariok Morningstar, Gamork, the Siglerpedia Czar, Donna, Misinformation, the Designer of Doom. Yes, just about the whole Dark Overlord Media family is going to be in attendance. And of course, that's not family as in Thanksgiving dinner and hugs and an ironing board. It's more along the lines of family as in getting hit in the knee with a baseball bat and buried in a shallow grave in New Jersey. We will all be there for Balticon, but what we're really there for is Siglerfest, which happens on the evening of May 26th and all day up until 4 p.m. on May 27th. It's sold out. We sold out of Siglerfest. Even though Siglerfest is sold out, there are a few spaces on the wait list. So if you want to join, there's a good chance we might have room for you. Email the Director of Doom at ak@scottsigler.com. After that, we're going to roll right into the Balticon weekend. Check that out at balticon.org. We are looking forward to it. We hope to see you guys all at Balticon. If you haven't ordered your copy of the All-Pro Book 3 of the Rookie Series, you can at scottsigler.com/GFL. Pre-order is only available until August 20th, 2011. If you want the book personalized, if you want to make sure you get a physical copy, make sure you do it in the pre-order phase. Remember, the All-Pro publishes on September 6th, so all formats for the book will be available then. The audiobook and ebook will be available for purchase and immediate download then. Of course, if you order the hardcover during the pre-order phase, then you get the ebook for free. What's up? What's up? If you've got a question or a problem, yo, I'll solve it or answer it. Check out the hook, Why My DJ Revolves It, at the Gore Line, 206-666-4673. That is 206-666-GORE. Call, leave your message, hear your own voice in a future episode of A Friday Fix when we feature the Gore Line. After this episode, I have 40 new junkie shoutouts and a promo for the ebook This Paper World by Jeff Lane. That's my 4 minutes of fury. Enjoy The Starter, episode number 10. Quentin walked up to the line, looking from left to right, taking it all in. His offense, dressed in practice whites, facing off against the Kraken's defense, dressed in practice blacks. The touchback remained locked in orbit above INAF City, making ship time roughly match city time. Noonday sun poured through the practice field dome, which Captain Cheevers had shaded slightly to block the worst of the light and heat. Quentin's short passing game was looking strong, but his deep throw timing just wasn't connecting. The Kraken's defensive line kept generating too much pressure. The left side of the Kraken's offensive line was doing fine. Kilo-Yoet didn't have much trouble with the pass rush of right defensive end Alexander Michnik. Kilo was in his ninth year as a pro and was the kind of dominant left tackle that every quarterback dreamed of. He was also the alpha male among the hierarchical key. Killo kept the rest of his kind playing hard. Just inside of Killo was Shodo Thicket, the Kraken's left offensive guard. Shodo was a fantastic football player, but was having some trouble stopping Myon Ikol, the Kraken's right defensive tackle. On each snap, the two linemen tore into each other with a frenzy that sent black blood flying. In his 12th year, Myon was finally coming into his own. If he could battle Shodo to a standstill, push him back, even get pressure on Quentin every fourth or fifth play, it boded well for Myon's season. Budo Schweck, Quentin's center, seemed flawless at both run and pass blocking. Quentin had no worries that Budo could protect him at all times. On the far right side of the line, offensive tackle Vu Kowil did battle with left defensive end Ibrahim Khomeini. Ibrahim seemed to have lost a step or two, or maybe didn't play all that hard in practice. At any rate, he only occasionally got past Vuko to lightly touch Quentin's do-not-hit jersey. Between Budo and Vuko, however, lay the real problem. Rookie right guard Shunan Wan. Shunan couldn't stop defensive tackle Mumo Killowy, who seemed to be in Quentin's face before Quentin could even complete a five-step drop and look downfield for a pass. While the violent and ill-tempered Mumo was a star in the making, he shouldn't have been in Quentin's grill on every damn passing play. Shunan Wan couldn't block for crap. He looked a mess. Helmet visor cracked, jersey torn, black blood dribbling down from his upper right forearm, all results of a constant beating at the hands of Mumo Killowy. And this was just practice. What would happen in a real game? Quentin bent behind center. "Green 10, hammer out!" he shouted down the far left side of the line. At the sound of the word green, heads turned his way. That word meant an audible, Quentin changing the play at the line of scrimmage. Calls of other colors, like blue or red, meant nothing. He called out a color on every play to maintain consistency, so the defense wouldn't know when he switched to play. "Green 10, hammer out!" Quentin shouted down the right side of the line. His offensive players heard the call, then stared straight ahead once again, ready to run the play. His call of hammer out had changed the play from a deep dropback to a quick pass. Instead of streaks and post patterns that might go 20 yards deep and take several seconds to run, all receivers switched to predetermined shorter routes, 5-yard hook patterns, inside slants towards the center of the field, or the well-practiced out patterns that took the receivers to the sidelines. No receiver would run a pattern deeper than 5 or 6 yards. He could call an audible like this if he saw the defense was running a linebacker blitz so he could get the pass off before he was sacked. Or he could call it because his offensive line couldn't block the defensive tackles. The audible also changed the assignment of rookie running back Dan Campbell, who was lined up in a single back set behind him. Instead of going out on a pass route, Dan would fake a handoff and help Shunan Wan block the defensive tackle Mumo Killowy.
Hut! Hut! Hut!
The offensive and defensive lines smashed together, key and heavy G bodies squeezing out grunts of rage and effort and pain. Quentin stepped back and to the right, stretching the ball out toward Campbell. Campbell raised his left elbow high, left hand on his sternum, right hand at his belt, pinky touching his stomach, thumb pointed out. Quentin stabbed the ball at Dan's belly, then pulled it back at the last second as Dan's arm snapped shut, faking the handoff. Quentin ran one more step away from the line, then planted and turned. He instantly had to jump right to avoid Campbell, who was flying backward thanks to a hit from the onrushing Mumo Killowy. Last season, the sight of the four-armed, 12-foot-long monster might have made Quentin pause, but such things had now become commonplace. He reacted on pure instinct, shuffling another step right, even as Mumo's long body compressed and gathered, the thing a key would do right before launching for a tackle. In that split-second pause, Quentin saw tight end George Starcher hook up at 5 yards, just past the end of the line. Starcher instantly saw that Mumo was blocking Quentin's line of sight, so the big tight end shuffled to his left to make a clear passing lane. Quentin saw this, processed it in less time than it takes to blink, and flipped a hard pass at Starcher. The ball had no sooner left Quentin's hands than Mumo Killowy's body violently expanded like a striking snake. an angry 580-pound snake. He smashed into Quentin, drove him backward into the nanoturf. It was a hard hit, but Mumo hadn't followed, hadn't let his weight land on top of Quentin. Quentin would feel that hit through the next day, for sure, yet for Mumo Killowee, it was just a love tap. Quentin rolled to his feet, seeing that Starcher had caught the pass and carried it another 5 yards before John Tweedy brought him down. Had this been a real game, Starcher's automatic adjustment would have just turned a blown block and a sure sack into a first down. Rick Warburg or Yutaro Kobayashi, as good as they were, wouldn't have reacted as fast. Whatever crazy George Starcher had in his head, it was worth the trouble.
Mumo Killowee!
Hokor speakers blared.
Did you just hit my quarterback?
The key lineman growled something low and nasty. I'm fine, coach, Quentin called up to Hokor's cart. Just a little tickle, that's all. Mumo growled something else, then scuttled back to the defensive side of the line. Quentin's offense ran back to the huddle. Shunan, the rookie right tackle, was the last to arrive, limping along on sore, tired legs, leaving a thin trail of black blood in his wake. Quentin shook his head. Just over 2 weeks away from the first game of the season against the ISIS Ice Storm. Unless Shunan Wan started playing better, or unless coach put someone else in the lineup, the first 3 games were going to be very, very tough. Quentin stepped off the elevator onto Deck 18, the Touchback's top deck. He'd been up here only once before, during his first tour of the ship after arriving as a rookie. That time, he'd been seeing the sights. This time, he'd been summoned. Summoned by his coach and the team owner to discuss a personnel decision. Quentin had to run down to the key locker room to take a bath and scrub up proper, with hot water and soap. He knew the nanite showers in his quarters technically got him cleaner, but when he bathed in water, he just felt better, more ready for the world. Hokor and Greedock would never know the difference, but it just felt more respectful to clean up the best he could. Greedock was a criminal and a killer, but he was also the team owner. He spent the money needed to find players like Starcher and the Awa twins. Keeping Greedock happy, happy and spending, was as much a part of the game as overcoming racism or eating with the team. In any context that involved pure football, Quentin would go out of his way to show Greedock proper respect. And maybe showing that respect could go a long way toward patching things up with the black-furred Quith leader. Quentin had even dressed in his best clothes, or tried to, only to realize he didn't even have a suit. A quick call to Masal the Efficient resulted in Pilkey showing up at Quentin's quarters, a sport coat in hand. It fit okay, but was tight in the shoulders and back. Another call, and Masal said he would acquire a new wardrobe. For now, however, Quentin had to make do with the ill-fitting sport coat. He had fixed his hair, he'd shaved, and his body felt relaxed from the key pool's near scalding water. Oh, that reminded him. He had yet to sit down for a meal with the key. The key, who ate their food alive. One thing at a time. Maybe making nice with Greedock first, then eating live animals. Quentin walked into the administration area. Orange walls complemented the white and black carpet. Once again, he took in the furnishings that catered to every species, two each for human, Quith leader, Sklorno, Heavy G, and Key. He admired the holographic frame showing 21 years of Kraken's greats, all moving in an endless repeat of some glorious play. He walked past the holoframe of the greatest Kraken of all. No matter where you went in the Touchback, the stadium, the Kraken's building, you were never far from a reminder of Bobby Aronik. The holoframe showed the baby-faced quarterback being held aloft by two key linemen. He held the GFL championship trophy high, pumping it up and down so it caught the field lights, his moment of achievement captured forever in computer memory. The image reminded Quentin of Bobby's short career, which in turn reminded Quentin of the bombing at the victory parade. Was someone out there really trying to kill him? He put the thought out of his mind. For now, up here in the Touchback, he was safe. Quentin left the holoframe behind and walked past doors and desks. Some of the desks had staff. Quith leaders, workers, a few humans. There were even a couple of Scalorno males, the tiny furry creatures nicknamed bedbugs, who went insane during the football games when their females soared high to fight for passes 25 feet in the air. Had all of these sentients been here the first time Quentin had visited Deck 18? And why hadn't he seen any of them during his months on the ship? He suddenly realized why, and it embarrassed him. The Touchback was a big ship, but not that big. The reason he hadn't seen these staffers was because they weren't allowed to circulate on the player decks. As he passed the staffers, everyone smiled at him or gave their species equivalent of a smile. They were clearly excited to see him up here. The fact that they weren't allowed on the field, on the player decks, it reminded Quentin of the places on Mokovi he hadn't been allowed to go because he was an orphan, because he wasn't part of an upstanding church family. Restaurants, clubs, some shops, the decent grocery stores. He hadn't been allowed to set foot in those places. Not until he'd become a football star, anyway. Quentin tried to nod at the stares and smiles. He realized they were looking at him the way he had once looked at the rich churchies back on Mokovi, the people who enjoyed privilege, prestige, who ate the finest foods, while poor children were hung for stealing bread. Well, shuck this. These sentients worked for the same team that he did. He would take it up with Greedock, but later in the season. One thing at a time. He reached Hokor's control room and pushed the buzzer next to the door. The door opened, and Quentin walked in. Part of his brain took in this room he'd never seen before. The entire back window looked out onto the practice field 18 decks below. A dozen holotanks lined the window. Only two were on. One tank showed highlights of a big, heavy-G offensive lineman dressed in a silver, gold, and copper uniform. The other showed a Scalorno in practice whites. Halawa, Quentin realized. A small part of his brain took this in, but the majority of his thoughts centered on the control room's occupants. Coach Hokor, Greedock the Splithead, and Donald Pine. Hokor sat behind a black desk. Greedock sat in a chair off to the side, and Pine was in one of two chairs in front of the desk. Quentin felt a rush of jealousy and annoyance at seeing his blue-skinned teammate, who wore an immaculate suit perfectly tailored to his athletic frame. Quentin felt instantly silly and inadequate in his poorly fitting, borrowed sport coat. Quentin had been called in to talk personnel with the top two people in the Kraken's organization, and yet Pine was already here, giving his opinion before Quentin could. Was Pine making a play for the starting job? No. No, Pine was a mentor, a friend. Quentin had to stop reacting to things with anger. If Pine was here, there was a reason, and that reason was probably to help Quentin.
Barnes, Greedock said. Have a seat. Nice coat.
Quentin felt his face turn red.
I just talked to Masal, Greedock said. I appreciate that you are improving your image. It reflects well on the organization. I told him to send your measurements to my tailor. He's the best, you know. I'll pay for it all.
Thank you, Greedock, but I'll pay for it. Greedock stared, said nothing. Quentin couldn't make out the owner's mood. Hopefully he hadn't offended Greedock by turning down the hospitality. Quentin was young, sure, but he'd been around organized crime his whole life. You did not want to be indebted to a sentient like Greedock the Splithead. Not for clothes, not for a flippin' bowl of soup, not for anything. Coach Hokor's upper left pedipalp gestured to the open chair next to Don. Quentin sat.
Barnes, Hokor said, we have an opportunity. The regular season starts in just over a week, and we have shortcomings. We have a chance to improve those shortcomings, but we wanted to talk to you about it first.
Quentin looked around the room, quickly taking in each face. The first face was the clear, one-eyed, cold stare of Greedock. Nothing to read there, but Quentin knew that Greedock was reading him. Quentin took a quick, deep breath and forced himself to be calm. If Greedock wasn't going to show emotion, Quentin wouldn't either. Coach Hokor's eyes swirled with a touch of green, the color of stress, sometimes anxiety. His fur seemed a bit more fluffed than usual. Finally, Quentin looked at Pine, and Pine looked sad. Corners of his mouth turned down just a bit, eyes soft. Quentin looked back to Hokor.
Okay, coach, what's this opportunity?
We have a major issue at right guard,
Hokor said.
Would you agree?
Were they going to buy a free agent right guard? Maybe an all-pro? Quentin fought to keep himself calm. A high-level right guard would solidify the offensive line and give him time to throw the ball.
Yes, coach, I would agree.
Put yourself in my position,
Hokor said.
If you were me, what would you do about Shunan Wan?
Quentin thought for a moment. 2 weeks into practice, and Shunan hadn't shown significant improvement. He just wasn't good enough. There was no way around it. Sad for the rookie, but that's the way it was. Still, Quentin was the team leader, and if someone had to make a tough decision that benefited the franchise, he would be the one to do it.
Shunan is a liability, Quentin said. But we have Akinata coming back in week 4.
Week 4?
Greedock said quietly.
We could be 0-3 by then, winless, in last place.
Quentin shook his head.
Not gonna happen, Greedock. We'll win at least one, maybe two.
Quentin automatically looked at Pine for confirmation. Don just raised his eyebrows, then dropped them back down again. An unreadable reaction.
Barnes, Hokor said. We have a trade offer for Michael Kimberlin, right guard from the Jupiter Jacks.
Michael Kimberlin?
Quentin's eyes flashed to the holotank showing the player dressed in silver, gold, and copper. Kimberlin. An all-pro, a veteran, and one of the few non-key offensive linemen in the GFL. While the heavy G was probably in the final few years of his career, there was no question that Kimberlin could instantly solve the Kraken's offensive line problem. Probably solve it permanently. When Akinatok came back from injury, he wouldn't have a starting job waiting for him. This should have been good news, exciting news, but Quentin sensed a coldness in the room. Nothing from Greedock, of course, but Hokor seemed bothered, and Quentin picked up even more of that sadness from Pine.
Kimberlin, Quentin said, knowing he had to ask the next question, knowing he would hate the answer. Who do the Jacks want for him?
They need receivers,
Hokor said.
Scarborough and Denver.
Quentin just stared. That was a ridiculous offer.
Scarborough's my top receiver, and Denver, she's our future.
Quentin almost bit his tongue after he'd spoken her name. He had been about to say, she's my friend. That was his first thought. An alien. One of the satanic races. His friend.
It's a good offer,
Hokor said.
Both teams prosper. The Jacks have a second-year right guard. They think he's going to give them 10 seasons. That means they can afford to deal Kimberlin.
But we can't afford to deal Scarborough, Quentin said. Like I said, she's my top receiver.
Was our top receiver,
Greedock said.
Haywick is our number one now.
Quentin felt his anger welling up. He fought to control it.
Greedock, you know Haywick had that year because of double coverage on Scarborough. Okay, sure, now Haywick is our number one, but we can't win without Scarborough.
Don leaned forward.
You sure about that, Q?
Yes, I'm sure.
What about next year?
Hokor said.
Scarborough is getting old. This could be your final season of high production. Do we want to pass up a player like Kimberlin, who will give us 3, maybe even 4 seasons, to hold on to a receiver whose best years have passed her by?
Then what about Denver, coach? Quentin said. She's in her second year. She's the fastest receiver we've got. She's only going to get better in seasons to come.
Seasons to come,
Greedock said.
Such an interesting phrase. Tell me, Barnes, how much benefit is that to the franchise if those seasons to come are back in Tier 2?
Quentin shook his head.
We're not going back. No way. I won't let it happen.
Don reached out his hand as if he was going to touch Quentin's shoulder, but he stopped himself and put the hand back on his knee.
It can happen, Q, Don said. It can, and if our offensive line can't protect you, it will.
Quentin felt his face getting hotter, redder. Were these jerks serious? Denver had played her heart out. The team adored her. Quentin had to control his anger. Talk reason here.
So we trade our number 2 and our number 4 receivers, he said, and we get a right guard that will last only a few years?
Long enough to find a better one, Greedock said. I am developing the best scouting agency in the galaxy. All we need to do is stay in Tier 1 for this season, and I can give you a team of all-star talent.
Quentin stood before he even knew he was doing it.
We have a team with all-star talent. We are not going down to Tier 2. I object to this trade.
Coach Hokor's black-striped yellow fur fluffed out, then settled back down.
That's why we called you here, Barnes. Normally, we'd pull the trigger on a trade of this caliber, but these are two of your top receivers. The decision is yours.
The words stunned him.
It's my decision?
Don nodded. I told them they needed your take, Q. You're the guy who has to deal with a weak offensive line. It's great to throw to Denver and Scarborough if you have time to throw, which you won't, at least not until Lakanatak comes back off injured reserve.
But he comes back in week 4.
Quentin, think, Don said. This is Tier 1. This is the promised land of football. Every game matters. A season is only 12 games. Lose the first 3, it could already be too late. And you're forgetting something else here.
Yeah, am I, Pine? What am I forgetting?
Don leaned back. Now he was the one trying to control his patience. Akanatak is a second-string player to begin with. How good do you think he is? When he comes back, is he good enough to protect you? Quentin stared at Don, stared and blinked. Quentin hadn't thought of that. Akanatak was a second stringer. He was better than Shunan Wan, sure, but how much better? As usual, Don Pine, the veteran, the 2-time Tier 1 champion, the former league MVP, was thinking several moves ahead. Quentin sat back down and let out a slow breath.
Okay, Don. I'm listening. You tell me. If it was you, what would your call be?
That sad look on Don's face again.
It sucks, but I'd make the trade. You can't win if you spend half your game looking for your teeth.
The office fell silent. They were waiting for him to decide. The future of two receivers hung on that decision. No, the future of two receivers, an all-pro lineman, and an entire franchise. His other teammates, all those people in the administration offices. But most importantly, the future of Denver. She'd been on that landing deck with Quentin back in the combine. They'd been rookies together, fighting to take the Krakens into Tier 1. She worshipped Quentin, literally worshipped him. If they made the trade, if he made the trade, what would that do to her?
No, Quentin said finally. Scarborough is too valuable, and Denver just has too much upside. We can't make this trade.
Coach Hokor leaned forward, yellow-furred pedipal pants pressed against the black desktop.
Are you sure, Barnes? When you are lying on your back after your 5th or 6th sack of each game, will you be sure then?
Quentin nodded. He'd taken beatings before. He'd just have to keep taking them for a little while longer. He could win with the offensive line he had. He knew he could.
I'm sure, Quentin said. I promise you, we will not go 0-3.
We had better not, Greedock said. All I can say is that if we leave this decision up to you and we go winless for the first 3 games, then the result is on you, Barnes, not on Hokor, on you.
There was no way around it. His coach, his mentor, his owner, they all wanted to make this trade. If passing on it was the wrong call, they might never again trust him to make the smart decision. But smart or not, he knew he'd made the right decision. Quentin again stood.
Is there anything else, Coach?
No,
Hokor said.
You may go.
Quentin left the control room and headed for his quarters. He'd made the right decision, sure. But if they didn't win, did the right decision even matter? There you go, junkies. A big 25-minute episode of The Starter. We've had some shorter episodes lately, but we're getting back in the swing. You got to keep in mind, the trick is we need to break the story in a logical place, and we're trying not to break it in the middle of a chapter. We want to give you full chapters. So sometimes the end of a chapter or a logical break in that chapter can be kind of in the middle of one, so we might only wind up with 15 to 18 minutes of good stuff. And sometimes it comes much later in the chapter, so you get 25, sometimes even 30 minutes. So it averages out. It averages out. Quit your bitching. It's a free podcast. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my backmybook.com experience after 40 new junkie shoutouts. The new junkies, these are smart, savvy, worldly, deadly accurate people who are wicked with a bow and arrow or a gun or even a pea shooter. I have seen new junkies kill an elephant at 40 paces with a friggin' straw and a dried pea. It wasn't pretty. It was impressive, but it wasn't pretty. So these 40 people have signed up with profiles over at scottsigler.com. That makes them eligible to be killed in a Scott Sigler story or become a character. If you guys could see how many characters have been named in the All-Pro from junkies who have signed up, uploaded their photo so I know what they look like, and got in there and participated in blog post comments and forums, etc., you'd be shocked. It's more than you can count on two hands, I assure you of that, and on your toes. It's probably like 40 or 50 would be my guess. People who have recently signed up are from Australia, Tiako and Baza. From Canada, Torn Down Unit. From England, Phil B76, Tatman, Jonesy Boy, and S. Perkins. From Japan, Igor V. Goth. From Norway, Quirex. From Scotland, The Mighty Juice. From Sweden, Ryujin. From the UK, Pete Asprin, McTiger, Slacker, Colin, and Skoda Exploder. From the United States of America, I Dare You to New Quentin Barnes, Dallas Fire, Hat Shop, Cold Rush, Poland the Unlimited, Jester 0781, Professor Zoom, Pipster 75, Kecompton 20, NF0911, Cliff MC82, Bro Stephen Knoll, Sherilyn 27, Vinning BJ, Miss Step, Keminarn, Martin 1920, X Floor Maddox, John 96 Martin, Quigley 252, Do the Daft, Godfather 1869, Larab Nichols, and KS Jeep. That list was prepared by the Evil Queen herself. And her favorite new junkie shout out this week is X Floor Maddox. The reason? Because he is from Canton, Michigan, which is the Evil Queen's hometown. Congratulations, X Floor Maddox. You are the favorite new junkie name of the week. And it looks like I am completely out of prizes. It does look like, though, I don't know if I gave these away before or not. These are some nice yellow, cushy earplugs that may or may not have been in my ears, way down deep in the waxy area. The X-Floor Maddox, you have won those. Get a hold of me and I'll find out how to get you your slightly used earplugs. So, backmybook.com. Now, the first two books that A. Kovacs and I at Dark Overlord Media launched were The Rookie and The Starter. And while we had a ton of success with those, we've also had some problems and it's been a learning curve for us. Part of what we had to figure out was the ordering process. How do we take all y'all's orders? We're talking about literally getting 1,000 orders the first day the books are up for sale, or somewhere in that ballpark. How do we handle that kind of incoming traffic and then manage the process, track all of those orders, get the labels made, boxes, ship them, everything else? And not to mention just taking the orders in the first place without crashing a server, which we did for both The Rookie and The Starter. Well, this year, A. Kovacs met a bunch of guys from backmybook.com, and they told us, very swaggerishly, they told us they could handle all of the problems, and then some. And for me, it was when they said, and then some, that I thought maybe these guys have enough bluster to work with us. But what they do is, we're pretty much the first client they've had. So anybody who's going to work with them gets the benefit of all of the features that A and I have asked for, all of the problems that we have run into that they have then solved, and just kind of the general riffing back and forth. So that's a really good thing. But right now, if you go to scottsegler.com/GFL and you click the pre-order button for the All Pro, that immediately takes you over to the Back My Book page. Or you can go to backmybook.com. In the upper right-hand corner is a link for my stuff. It's got my mug there. You can click on that. You can go see my books. You can see what kind of software they have available. So basically, they're setting up inventory for us, inventory control, and we're able to list what products we want to sell in the order that we want to sell. We are selling print books, audiobooks for immediate download, and ebooks for all formats, including Nook and Kindle. Now, we still have our books available in the Nook store and the Kindle store, and that's a separate deal, but you can get them all from Back My Book. The coolest thing about that is it gives us one central place where we can sell all of our books, sell all of our merch, and we get reports. Any day I can go in there and see how many books I have sold. I can see how much money we've made. A can go in there and print shipping labels or get a list of shipping addresses from them and be able to process the orders and get the products out to the customers right away. I do all of my newsletters there now. The newsletter process used to be kind of complicated. Now it's all done within Back My Book. I can upload any email list that I have. Their system dedupes the list. So if I accidentally upload the same thing twice, it's done. They also, of course, have an unsubscribe feature on their list. So if you're sending emails out to people and they don't want it, they unsubscribe. That's all handled on the Back My Book end. Those things right there are absolutely enough for you to look into it. We are entering into a different world. On the one hand, it's a worse world because you don't have the resources of a midsize or big publisher to take care of all of this stuff for you so that you can sit in your pretty little ivory tower and write. Because what you do is so important that you can't sully yourself by having to go worry about the business side of things. Except for a handful of people, those days are completely over. So that's bad. What's good is you no longer are dependent on a publisher dipping down the magic fairy dust wand of success and tapping you on the shoulder and saying, I dub thee an author. Fuck that. You now have the ability with ebooks, with Kindle, with Nook, with people like Back My Books to do your own thing, write the book exactly the way that you want to. Then you go out and you fight to build an audience. No, the audience is not going to come to you. No, you are not important. No, you are not special. You are going to have to roll up your sleeves, work your ass off to make something happen. But if you are willing to do that, it almost doesn't matter what kind of story you write. You're going to be able to go out and find people who are interested in that. Now, if you can get their interest and then you can grab their information, how are you going to stay in touch with them? Are they signed up for your fanbook fan page? Do you have their email on an email list that they opted into? Is there another way in which you can keep sending him information? As in, I've got this, go check this out. If you can build up your audience by any means necessary, then you are able to write books and sell books to that audience, and eventually that's going to be something that can make you some money. The best example right now has got to be Nathan Lowell, the author of the Solar Clipper series, Quarter Share, Half Share, and all of those books. Nathan's just been cranking out books for 4 years. Now he's selling his ebooks on the Kindle store, and he's basically doing this full time. I know there's other names that you guys have heard of, but Nathan's a name that you probably either haven't heard of or you know about him from patiobooks.com, where he's been the tall hog at the trough for quite some time. What Nathan has done is write his own books the way he wants to write them, partnered up with a publisher to get those books on Kindle store. He didn't have to deal with some gigantic publisher. He didn't have to wait for a publisher to say, we're going to tap you on the shoulder and make you great. Nor did he have to listen to a publisher say, we're going to sign you and promote the hell out of you, and then not promote him at all and leave him stuck in a multi-year contract, which happens to a lot of authors. So it's kind of a long-winded thing I just got through, but sites like backmybook.com, if you are an aspiring author or you've got any backlist, you might want to go check that site out and see what kind of things that they can do for you. Because there is more to life than just the Kindle store. If you are an aspiring author, I'm sure you have read a ton on how people are putting their books up on Kindle and they're making a buttload of money and everybody's happy. Customers are happy, the author's happy, Amazon's happy, but there is more to Kindle and it's important that you prepare yourself for a world in which eventually a competitor or competitors are going to come out and eat Amazon's lunch. And if you don't think that that's going to happen, I have one word for you, MySpace. At one time on the internet, MySpace was the unbeatable 800-pound gorilla. No one was going to be able to take them out. And look where they are now. It's a ghost town in there. It's almost gone because of something called Facebook. Eventually, someone's going to come along and do the same thing to Amazon. So if you're an aspiring author or you're a mid-list author, etc., and you've already got your books up on the Kindle store, go check out backmybook.com anyways. Give those guys a holler and just see if there's any common ground. As an author, you need to diversify and you need to start trying to put your work in as many places as possible and making yourself flexible and reactive enough that you will be able to move quickly when the marketplace changes. And if you don't think the marketplace is going to change, just think 3 years ago, there were maybe 10 people who thought this ebook thing was going to amount to anything. And look at all these people now. There you go. That's my long-winded sermon for the day. That is it for me. I now leave you with the promo for This Paper World, an ebook by Jeff Lane, and I will talk to you all real soon.
Jim Hunt has a past. It's a past he'd like to keep locked behind a door in his mind. But when his old mentor is captured and used as bait to lure him into a trap, will Jim accept his destiny? What if that destiny leads to the ultimate sacrifice? This Paper World, the breakout podcast novel from Jeff Lane, is now available as an ebook at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and other fine ebook retailers. Buy the book that fans are calling excellent, keeps you at the edge of your seat, a hell of a novel, and simply brilliant. Log on to your favorite ebook seller now and buy This Paper World by Jeff Lane. And if you haven't heard the audiobook yet, go to jefflaneaudiobooks.com or iTunes and download the free podcast. Get ready to leave your world behind and enter This Paper World. jefflaneaudiobooks.com.
You have been listening to The Starter, Book 2 in the Galactic Football League series. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. Produced by the A-Team of Ariok, Morningstar, and A. Kovacs. For more information on the author and for more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Heaven's a Lie by the band Lacuna Coil.